Luke Dukakis of the News and Observer joins us every Friday, although we've both been off, I think, some Fridays. How are you? Are you ready for the holiday? If I have one more person ask me if I am ready for Christmas, I mean, are you ready for Christmas, Luke?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, sure.
it's coming.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. You know, to me, people talk about Christmas and the holiday season. To me, it's bowl travel season. So that's really more where my logistical focus is.
Where are we heading? That's actually one of the questions I'm going to ask you.
I'm going to San Diego for the Holiday Bowl, which may actually be played this year. We'll see. and then going straight to Charlotte to see if State gets to play in a bowl game this year. So we'll use the same joke on both games.
Oh, but, excellent.
San Diego to Charlotte.
Very, very nice. Frequent flyer miles abound. I'll start with this. Is there a city in the United States that you think deserves a bowl game?
Ooh, that's a great question.
You went to college in Philly. Why can't we get a bowl game in Philly?
Well, we have the Liberty Bowl. They've kind of had their, you know, that's where the Liberty Bowl started. So Philly's kind of had its chance.
Yeah, but now it's in Nashville.
Memphis.
My fault. Memphis.
Yes. You're getting the eminently memorable Liberty Bowl confused with the eminently memorable Music City Bowl.
Yes.
only one of which I've covered. All right, let's see. What are we missing that would be a good place to go? I mean, most of them are covered. I mean, the Virgin Islands?
I mean, I don't see the difference between the Virgin Islands and the Bahamas Bowl, but like, why can't we have one in Philly?
I mean, Philly would be great. I mean, the Army-Navy game's there. It's a good, solid football stadium. Weather's obviously an issue. I mean, I think Lambeau would be a cool place to have a bowl.
Sure.
No one wants to go to Green Bay in December.
I would like 40 more bowl games. I think if you as long as you field a football team, you should be bowl eligible.
I'm going to go ahead and sort of disagree with you on that because I don't really want to watch a 3-9 team play a 2-10 team.
You don't have to watch. I'm not watching these games.
I get the fact that if you're 500, you're going to make a bowl game, but it still feels to a certain extent to me like you've earned something. A bowl game should be something you earn. I mean, I realize these are exhibitions, but I also think there's some value into having them be an earned exhibition. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. I'm not watching the Bahamas Bowl at this very moment, so maybe I'm not the target audience.
Nor am I. It's on in the studio. I am not watching it. I'm waiting for whatever bowl game is coming after this. There's a bowl game at 3:00 too. That is apparently between two teams that are ranked, Troy and Texas San Antonio. Are going to play. Look, I am more of a these kids, these guys, young men who have played and practiced all season long. They deserve a trip and you know, $400 worth of bowl swag no matter where they go. No matter what their record was.
I think they deserve a trip if they deserve a trip. That's probably where we go.
Oh, man. You're making these kids earn it. They earn it every day in practice, Luke Dukakis of the News and Observer at Luke Dukakis on Twitter. Speaking of Troy, former head coach Chip Lindsey is now the new offensive coordinator at UNC. I am taking the wait-and-see approach, unlike most of South Carolina reporters took with their hiring of Dow Loggins as offensive coordinator at South Carolina that caused such an outburst from Shane Beamer, I couldn't even believe it. Do you have any thoughts on Chip Lindsey as the OC now at UNC?
No, I think the most important thing for North Carolina is going to be continuing the momentum on offense. You know, the offensive line was better this year, but there's turnover on the coaching staff there too. You know, Phil Longo had such autonomy with that offense. That it's going to be interesting to see whether, you know, Mac is perhaps a little more involved. You know, Lindsey being a former head coach leads you to believe probably that he'll have the same autonomy. But there's a lot to work with there, obviously, not just with Drake May, but those young running backs are really good too. You know, Omarion Hampton and the others played more at the start of the year than the end of the year. But still, there's young talent there. And to me, UNC's issues aren't going to be offensive no matter who the coordinator is. I think probably you could throw you and me in there and we'd be able to sketch out an offense with a stick in the dirt that is going to score some points with the players they have. The bigger issue for me on UNC is and continues to be the, you know, can the defense ever become the sum of its parts. But I think probably they'll be fine on offense, no matter who the coordinator is. And the fact that they got someone who's a former head coach probably isn't going to hurt.
Luke Tkach of the News and Observer is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show on a Friday. Can we talk about the Carolina Hurricanes and the fact that they win games without really being able to score goals, which is sort of remarkable. They've averaged less than 2.5 goals. They're 8-1-5 in their last 14 games. They have averaged less than 2.5 goals per game in that span, and that's with a 6-goal night and a 4-goal night. How do they do that?
So this is one of those things where it's like, here's you and me being average peon thinkers last year saying, well, the Hurricanes need to score more goals to win. and the Galaxy Brain Hurricanes are like, no, we're going to carry 3 goalies on the roster, and we're going to win every game 1-0. It's bizarre, but I think it the way the Hurricanes play, the longer they go without scoring goals regularly makes me feel, and maybe I'm just a naive, stupid, hopeless, I guess, optimist on this, but you can't create that many chances and score this few goals. There has to be a statistical rebound somewhere. There has to be some regression to the mean. And yes, maybe they're not the most talented finishing team that ever laced up their skates, but they're more talented than this.
Yes.
And I think that maybe the fact that they're muddling through this offensive stretch and still piling up points is maybe a hopeful sign for the future, that if this does turn and some of this is just a statistical fluke, you know, kind of like, you know, a team that's plus 10 in turnover margin in college football 1 year is likely to have a worse season the next year because odds are they're going to be closer to minus 10. If this bounces back for the Hurricanes and their shooting percentage goes 4 or 5 points above average, they aren't going to be in a position where they're finishing some of these chances and piling up goals. Now, you say, you and I may say that, and I know the guy's already probably adding me on Twitter right now saying, you've been saying that for 2 years, and it still hasn't happened. But I do believe with the talent on this team, and especially some of the young talent like Natchez and Svechnikov, that there is still a lot of upside when it comes to finishing that we haven't seen yet. And they're not, it's almost physically and mathematically impossible for a team to be this bad at finishing over a long period of time. That has to rebound at least a little bit. And the fact that they continue to find ways to win or at least get to overtime time and time again when the offense isn't there, I hopefully would lead to some resilience in the long term.
Yeah, looking at the analytics of it, in terms of grade A scoring chances, that's the term Rod Brind'Amour uses. The Hurricanes are second in the NHL behind, I believe it's Florida right now, at generating grade A scoring chances. They're second. They are last in converting them. Their shooting percentage on high danger scoring chances is 7.1%. The team they just played last night, Seattle, is middle of the pack in generating chances. But their shooting percentage conversion percentage of those is 12.3%. Now 12.1 after last night because they only they didn't convert one.
If the Hurricanes were clipping along at 12%, people would be planning the parade.
I mean, it didn't even have to be that. If it was 10%, which is league average, there would be 8 more goals, and that's just at 5-on-5.
And you know, we used to talk about in I hate to bring this up. In the Bill Peters era, when the Hurricanes would regularly outshoot teams and lose, I would point out that they're piling up a lot of shots, but they're not good shots. They're from the perimeter. Mm-hmm. There's no traffic in front. It's a mirage. This is a false pretext that the shot totals don't reflect the way that the games actually go. And you could see that if you looked at high danger chances, if you looked at expected goals, that those numbers didn't necessarily match up with the gaudy shot totals. But that's not the case here. The underlying analytics are good, and everything we know about hockey from a mathematical, statistical sense is that this stuff should, to some degree, maybe not a huge degree, to some degree, even out in the end. The fact that it's December and we're still sort of talking about it's a little disconcerting, but I can't believe that the Hurricanes are this bad a finishing team for real. There's got to be a little regression to the mean. You've seen it. This isn't Alex Semin firing shots at the goalie's glove from 400 feet away. These are good chances.
Yeah.
They're going to go in eventually. Maybe not all of them, but more of them are going to go in eventually. Yep. And again, I think the fact that you're winning some of these games, well, you're basically having the same offense you had in the Rangers series, is probably a pretty good sign.
They allow nothing. They are best in the league in fewest grade A chances allowed, and the conversion rate against them is the lowest in the league at 5.8%. So they're not giving up goals. In the span that we've just talked about, the 14 games, they've only allowed 2.1 goals a game. That's why they're 8-1-5 in that span, because they're on average winning by almost a half goal a game. Luke Tkach is joining us. I know you mentioned it before. They're going to carry three goalies. You know, I'm joking around with Rod every time I talk to him before a game. He doesn't want to even think about the decision. I'm sure they've thought about it. I mean, the kid's the goalie now, isn't he?
I mean, I think he's the goalie for now. The one luxury the Hurricanes have here is they can ride the hot hand for as long as they want to ride the hot hand. And right now, you know, Kochetkov's the hot hand. That doesn't necessarily have to stay that way. I think the great thing about having eventually three healthy goalies is you are in a position where you can do that. You know, if Kochetkov cools off, you've got two veteran NHL guys, proven mm-hmm. NHL guys, who can step in and play. And if one of them cools off, you've got other options. Salary cap-wise, roster-wise, they're in a position where they can carry all three for as long as they want. There's no pressure to make a change there. You know, if it ends up being Anderson and Raanta for a period of time, obviously they're going to want the kid to get some work. But there's no hurry. There's no impetus for that. It's let the kid cook and see what happens. And yeah, I mean, if you end up in April and he's your guy, then he's your guy, and you ride with him. But there's no, you don't have to decide that now. You and I don't have to pencil him in for the first game of the playoffs now. You know, let it happen. And but yes, for the moment, for December and probably through Christmas and maybe New Year's, you know, it's his until something happens that says otherwise. And if that happens, then you cross that bridge when you come to it, because it's not like there's a Scott Darling or an Eddie Lack who's the other option. Your other options are really good.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.
Yeah, they haven't played all that well. That's my only trepidation there, is if Freddie were playing better, then I could see, just say, all right, Freddie, it's your gig back. But
He hasn't earned it this year.
No.
So he's got to win it back. And you know what? Look, we all get motivated for different reasons. It's been Freddie's job since about this time last year. Maybe a little fighter under his butt is what Freddie Anderson needs to get back to playing the way he did in the regular season last year.
Before I ask you about the World Cup, I know you've written a bunch recently about the Courage. We got more news. I guess the current Courage player said that the abuse under Paul Riley wasn't just isolated to when he was with Portland, but that it happened here. What has disturbed you about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that. It's the fact that it didn't end, and the fact that she didn't feel comfortable, even in the environment after the original allegations were released, even in the Yates report that U.S. Soccer did, that it wasn't until the joint NWSL-NWSLPA investigation that Kaylee Kurtz felt comfortable coming forward to say that she realized that she believed that Paul Riley was grooming her, which I know is a loaded political term these days, but this mm-hmm. is the actual use of it, which is, you know, the gaslighting and the abuse that puts someone in a position where you could potentially sexually abuse them, which is what, you know, Riley had done at other points in his career. And the Courage were adamant that they hadn't seen here. But then you find out from this report that there were complaints that he was weight-shaming players. And there were complaints that he was doing other things like threatening national team opportunities. And so this had been going on the whole time. And the Courage players didn't feel like they could report it. Or when they did report it to the team, as Kurt did to an assistant general manager, her concerns were minimized. So, you know, this whole Courage position from the beginning has been, you know, well, you know, we tried to look into his history in Portland and nobody would tell us the truth and he was great here. Well, it turns out that not only was he not great here, they were criticized in this latest report for not being diligent enough in uncovering what Riley did in Portland. Even when his name came up for the U.S. women's national team job, and Cindy Parlow-Cohn, who's the president of U.S. soccer and very involved in the NCFC youth program, realized he wasn't a suitable candidate for the women's national team because of that history. He continued to coach the Courage. No one ever said, hey, maybe this is a bad guy. So I think there's just an incredible amount of willful disbelief and negligence on the part of Courage management. And at some point, someone's got to be held accountable for this. It's not just Paul Riley. They created an environment where, as players said, it was a culture of fear, and no one in management seemed to want to do anything about it. At one point in the report, they said they thought the league was going to handle it. We know now that the league wasn't doing anything.
No.
But there's an obligation on the part of the Courage at some point. One, to answer for any of this, it's been 48 hours, and they haven't said a word.
Yep. Nothing.
It's kind of gross, actually. It basically says that they were okay with it.
Who you got on Sunday? Argentina or France?
I think it's Messi's time. I think France is actually a better team, but I just get that team of destiny sense from Argentina. And, you know, it's like the yin and the yang of Ronaldo and Messi. Ronaldo going out in tears, crying, useless. I think Messi goes out on top.
The difference in this game is that Argentina is actually the best defensive team that made the knockout, that made the final 16. And it's not close. They are wickedly good defensively. So, and they also have that Messi guy. And they've got other guys
France
who can finish.
Overall, goal line, probably a better, more talented, deeper team. But I think Argentina's just got that sense to them that they're going to find a way. I mean, they've found a way against teams other teams have struggled to find a way against. I just feel like that's going to happen again.
Luke Tkach, appreciate your time, man. We'll talk to you next Friday before the holiday. We'll give out Christmas presents or something.
Awards. We'll come up with some awards.
Oh, we can do that. We'll do awards. I'll talk to you later, man. Thanks.
GEICO asks, how would you love a chance to save some money on insurance? Of course you would. And when it comes to great rates on insurance, GEICO can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners or renters coverage. Plus, add an easy-to-use mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more, and GEICO is an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save. It's easy. Simply go to GEICO.com or contact your local agent today.